Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
All right, guys, here we go. Boy, I'll tell you what. We used to talk about the postseason in hockey, really, you know, raising the game, but it's happening in the NBA this year. I mean, you could have just not watched a regular season game and just check out the playoffs and you'll be all set. So let's get to that. We'll start with the Celtics in a minute, but I have to remind you here with the Ryan Goodman Tangway Along with the Ride podcast brought to you by Bet Online. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, including updated odds of the playoffs, fights, and even next season's futures. And don't forget that baseball is back and the start of Major League Baseball season is finally here. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. So let's start with the Celtics. And just what a great basketball game. I mean, I'll start with you, Bob. It delivered, man. And we'll get to the, you know, Kyrie flipping the bird and all that stuff. But what a game.
It was a wonderful game. And, of course, it was punctuated at the end by two exemplary things accomplished by the Boston Celtics. The first was a textbook example of how to defense two great players with the game on the line. The great double team that forced Kyrie to give the ball up to Durant, who was guarded well and was forced into an off-balance prayer of a three-pointer, which he missed. So starts with that. Rebound outlet. And then what they did on the last possession was what is, you know, it should be done, but you don't expect it to be done by anybody, and certainly not by the Celtics of December and of 2021, they wouldn't have made that play. Right. You know that. We all know that.
From all angles, Bob. From the Tatum angle, moving without the ball, from the Marcus Smart angle with, you know, he would have jacked that three. We know that.
Yeah. Now, I have a question. Do you think that if they were down two rather than one, that he would have jacked that three?
I hope not. I hope he would have made the same decision to try to.
But what do you think? Yeah, I think it's a 50-50. I mean, here's why. And we know that he seems to have been reformed. He's got religion now. He understands how to play the position.
The point guard religion.
Yeah, he does. He's got the. He's a member. He's got baptism. I don't know who baptized him.
Yeah, he found it. He found the point guard guy.
Ime. I give it to Ime.
Maybe he went to 427 Salisbury Street and Worcester and you know, and to see the great godfather of point guards. I don't know. But here's my question. In the modern world with the mentality that they have, how many times do you see when a guy is down two, they won't go for the two?
Right.
Because they don't even think about the two. It's all about the mentality of the game is the three.
To win.
I wonder if it were two rather than one. I'm so thank God they were down one that – he would have gone for it. Well, we'll never know. I'm just throwing it out there.
Well, I mean, Marcus had hit. He was shooting the ball well, so maybe he would have taken the shot.
But I think most people in that circumstance in 2022 would have taken. All right, but thank God it was a one. All right. So on every level, it was great. You know, the Brown giving it up. He could have forced something on the baseline. Yeah. Brown giving it up. Smart doing what he did with the up fake and duck through the two guys. And then the smart cut by – which was reminiscent of DJ's cut after Larry stole the ball, by the way.
Yep.
If DJ doesn't cut to the basket, Larry's falling out of bounds and Pistons win that game, by the way. Just remember that. DJ's cut. Well, he came, our guy in there this year came from the foul line. And when you see the replay, you know, Durant's still standing there just watching, and that's fine. And then it's been commented upon by some people, but not enough. The deft, that's D-E-F-T, artful, artistic, balletic spinning layup.
Right.
He could have crashed over Kyrie, and God knows, maybe he doesn't get the call. Maybe it's a charge. You don't know. He avoided contact beautifully and then just laid the ball in. And
yeah, so much of what happened in those final two possessions was something that, again, you alluded to, like we didn't see from this team for 2 years, right?
No.
Moving the basketball. Like, it was beautiful, right? Everybody was giving up a good shot for a better shot.
That's how you should be playing the game. But
they didn't.
And it's not just them, Jeff, and it's not just them.
Right.
It's not just them. It's the, and this is all taking back. Oh, this is a lot of things at stake here. One is the worship of the three, which I think, as I said, if it were a 2-point game, 99% of teams would have taken a three and just gone for the win rather than worrying about going overtime. That's number one. Unless they got an open dunk or something like that. All right. So you're right. The sharing the ball, that's the way it should be played. I think maybe Phoenix might do that. I mean, Miami might do that. All right, fine. But we know in December the Celtics weren't doing that. And
Hell no.
Once again, I'll come back. Marcus, you happily proved me wrong.
He's the key.
I'm so happy to be wrong. Yeah, I said you're not a point guard. Well, he's learned.
We all did. We all did. And I've seen him play since he was 15 years old, Bob. So to make a change like this, and I don't know how old Marcus Smart is now. He's got to be, what, 20? 28, let's say. Yeah. So he's been playing like this for 13 years. And to change who you are and the way you play, I give a lot of credit to Marcus Smart. I give a lot of credit to Ime Udoka, because whatever buttons he and my guess is Damon Stoudemire, the assistant coach who played the point guard position for years in the NBA, deserves a lot of credit too for working with Marcus Smart this year and figuring it. Yeah.
Turned 28 last month.
And the defensive player of the year.
Ninth year.
And the defensive player of the year too, guys.
I'm so happy about that. Yeah. It's just, you know, I'm making this all about me. I'm sorry. Just indulge me for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
How happy I was on both levels. Number one, that he got it. I'm glad a guard got it. I'm glad, you know, it doesn't always have to be about a shot blocking center, as good as they are. Gobert, I'm nothing against him. No, God knows, you know, but I'm glad they gave it to something other than a shot blocking center. Okay. A, B, this completes the Bob Ryan daily double, in that Jackie Bradley 3 years ago got his gold glove that he deserved 3 years before that. And now Marcus Smart, and to me, they're the same person. They were until Marcus got the religion, the same person on their field. They were these athletic, lopsided, brilliant guys in one and so-so in the other department. But anyway, I see them in the same light. So now he's got the defensive player of the year to match Jackie Bradley's gold glove. I'm down off the soapbox. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, listen, he's done it on both ends of the court this year. He wasn't great defensively a year ago, not nearly as good as he had been. And he's gotten back to that and what he's done in the op. Usually, if you spend that much energy on the defensive side of the ball, and maybe it's helped him a little bit that he's just been more of a facilitator, so he can spend more energy on the defensive end of the ball. And again, you're letting guys make plays rather than constantly trying to do it yourself, which I thought he was trying to do too much. So I don't know what it's been. It would be great to have him on after the season and try to get his take on exactly what it was and who it was that got him to change. Because he's been the key.
If he would even admit that he's changed, I don't know. Right. You know, he might say,
well, no, he hates me. So, I mean, his agent threatened to strangle me once. Because I said what Bob was saying. I said what we were always saying. We say Marcus is gone and he's not playing the game right. And his agent was down at the garden. He was like, he was tangling. I'm going to strangle him. Like, now, you know, he's done it about facing. Like Bob says, here's the thing, guys, right now. And I was very, I was just kind of cautious going into this series. because the Celtic Hawks were out, and that's fine. They were the regular season. The Celts are going to wipe the floor with the Nets and so forth. And even some of the media members, it's like, wait a minute, guys, wait a minute. Come on. This, the playoffs are different. Kyrie's coming back. Durant's been hurt. Yep. But what happened was the final play, which convinced me, okay, and Bob talked about it and Jeff talked about it, is the pass from Marcus Smart to Tatum. Now, that also is tape. Guys, we've seen it with Belichick. I'll use that. Brady and Belichick were able to say, look, if you play as a team, it works. Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, look, if you play as a team, it works. What Udoka has, and he obviously has done a great job, is now he's got tape. All he has to do for anybody is play that tape. And we all know, guys, that's what it's about. That's how when guys know that if I listen to this coach, I will win and make more money in any sport. In any sport, and now he has the evidence.
That is a great point. And as you spoke, something occurred to me. You think that isn't being done by other coaches right now?
Sure.
Oh, I wouldn't be said. Somebody, I'll bet at least two or three of the have done it already or are planning to do it. And certainly every college and high school should be doing it. You know, if it should be showing it to them.
Bob, I mean, I know that I thought back to the 80s because I know, Bob, we always like to mention Winning Time and it gets Bob Ryan going on HBO. But, you know, I remember in the 80s, I can't remember who the assistant coach was, but the Celtics were running people out of the building and the ball wasn't hitting the floor. And I mean, the Lakers were doing it too, but it was the Celtics were being unselfish, I should say. I shouldn't say running people out of the building, but they were definitely a pass-oriented team.
Yeah, they were.
And the assistant coach says, I don't know why more people don't do it. It's not brain surgery. If you do it, you win.
Well, you have to have the right players.
You got to have the right players. You got to have the right players. But, I mean, that's the thing that's so frustrating.
I didn't think the Celtics had the right personnel. Well,
it's the coach, though, Jeff. That's it. I mean, right now, you got to give coach of the year to Ime. You got to.
Well, I'm not going to necessarily.
He's in the equation. There's a lot of good candidates.
Well, there are, but I mean, Bob, this team was done. You just said.
They were at best angling for the 4 or 5 seed.
He inherited a mess. That's what we fail to admit, right? What Brad left behind, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. Again, now part of it was in a pandemic. They're in a bubble for a year. It wasn't the same. I get it all, but listen, the chemistry wasn't right. We could see that. And what Ime has done in the last, you know, 40 or so games is remarkable. And I think, again, he had to let them bottom out to some degree before he could get their attention and get them to understand, like, hey, you keep playing this way, but here's what you are. The numbers show it. You're a 500 team. You're a play-in team. Unless you guys change.
There's one other thing, and this is, of course, back to coaching, which is they didn't call timeout after the rebound. And this is something, this is age-old, debate about what you should do. I'm thinking about how they may have been prepared situationally, perhaps by Ime, you know, and if we get in a certain circumstance, you know, go, you know, however many seconds, you know, cut off line, whatever, you know, don't call timeout. Allowing the other team to set their defense and us to maybe botch the inbounds play, you know, all the thing. And you know, when you do that, you know it's going to be that. You know that's going to round up in a long shot, a three by somebody. So that's the other thing. I'm just saying history. There was a game back in the 70s. The Celtics beat the Bullets on a Sunday afternoon when they had a similar situation of which they got the rebound and decided not to call the timeout. Down one, and the winning basket was a trailer fast break jumper by Dave Cowens. That just flashed across my mind. So good basketball is good basketball, no matter what decade we're talking about. But this was just pure good basketball. By the way, it's gratifying to see. I tweeted after the game about how exemplary this was and the way to play the ball. A great decision and great cut. And I'm up to 2,100 likes so far, so I guess people are – no, I'm great. That's nice, you know.
The record for Bob.
Well,
it's nice once in a while.
I may not be – I don't know if it's a record, but it's a good one. For me, that's pretty good. I'm not, you know. And anyway, that people appreciated that what they just saw. I think it's going to have resonance, in the league. I think people – a very interesting point you made, Gary, about the tape, because I really think it's not just going to be the Celtics. But it was wonderful to see. I mean, all right, now the rest of the game, you know, had they lost, what would we be saying if they didn't score? What would you have said?
Well, sure, but I mean, that all the difference in the world. But what we would have said is that they're not ready for prime time, and they lost to two great players. Because I mean, you can see what you want about
one play. One play makes such a difference in the narrative, doesn't it?
Of course, Jeff. But
if you want to go to the defense and the offense, you got to have the defense first. Yep.
The way they shut down KD in the first three quarters of the first half was amazing.
He'll bounce back. I'm not worried about that. The other guy got 39. The other guy was fantastic. We might want to do it. All right, let's elephants over in the room here.
Here we go.
It's waving its trunk. Okay.
Wait a minute. Let's see. Okay. Oh, did I fool anybody? That's the wrong finger.
The elephant's in the room. Let's go.
All right, go ahead, Bob, Kyrie. Giving everybody the bird throughout the game.
It ain't going to phase him in terms of performance. So forget it, folks. The guy can play, and he's, you know, maybe it'll spur him to doing something stupid. I don't know.
But he did the final play of the game.
Well,
that's him defensively. That's got nothing to do with anything else.
I mean, he couldn't stop a 6'10 guy. Come on, that's not.
No, I mean, well, sorry, when he had the ball. I mean, when he was one-on-one through that whole thing. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Get the ball to KD. Right, get the ball to KD. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, no, but, you know, it's all predictable. You know, he's I don't want to get too sanctimonious about it. It's not going to help you but doesn't surprise me. He is who he is. He's contemptuous. He's arrogant. And he's good. He thinks he can back it up. And he had 39 points, and he shot that would have been the number one story. If they win the game, that would have been the number one story. The whole package, the heckling and the screw you folks with 39 and huge baskets in the fourth quarter. You know,
the problem I'll say, and again, I understand it. I understand people get upset. Athletes these days are different than they were years ago. They'll fight back a little bit more. They'll talk to the crowd. I just feel like the more you fight back, Kyrie, on this, the more you might escalate the situation. And that's what I worry about. Like, first of all, I don't know if you guys saw the clip at halftime. Somebody yelled, "Kyrie, you suck." And he came back with a comment that I'm not going to repeat. But it was like, when I went to I said this last night on NBC Boston. When I went to Providence this year, I had half the student section yelling, "Goodman, you suck," at me. Legitimately. And what do? You look over and you smile or you wave. Hey, whatever. Go ahead. Call me whatever. As long as you don't call my wife or daughter something, call me whatever you want on Twitter, in person. Call me ugly. I don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. Like, take the high road, Kyrie. Unless they are, listen, if they're saying something over the line about your family or something racist.
Yeah, racist. That's
fine. I'm all for it. But we heard what you suck, Kyrie, and he fires back with "suck my," you know what? I mean, come on.
Well, that's
right.
Just,
like,
you gotta expect that. That's
is he gonna get fined? I'm surprised we haven't heard anything.
No, I haven't heard anything yet either.
I would think
that's the old sticks and stones break my bones category to me. You know, that was the way we were raised in the 50s. Sticks and stones
will break my bones.
Yeah. The world is social media. People are used to firing back. And again, listen, I could have, one guy got up in my face at Providence, literally got up in my face and starts yelling at me. I wanted to punch him. Obviously. I wanted to punch him, but I didn't say anything to him. I just said, like, "Hey man, like, get away. That's all. Like, just get out of my face. That's all you have to say." But come on. Like, I just think again, Kyrie's got to grow up too here. Now there's some fans that need to grow up as well.
Well, that's the concern, is that I'm, you know, when you guys say, "How will this escalate?" We've seen things come out of the stands.
Yes.
And that's not good, man. No. And, you know, it just,
right.
You know, if somebody goes in the stands or out of the stands, I mean,
that's what I worry about.
For some reason, there's a bravado now with a fan that, and sometimes even with the players, you know, that is not great.
But the problem, you know, one problem for us in Boston is, given our history, the city in general, the whole thing,
reputation,
you know, the racism thing is always hanging around, and by heckling an African-American player of great stature in that way. Somebody, you know, somebody's going over the line. Yep. Maybe a guy yelling in the balcony and nobody heard it down the stands. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't reflect well on we all pay the price. We all Bostonians, I'm calling myself a Bostonian now. We paid up that price.
Right. And it hurts the Celtics with free agency.
Because of a few jerks, you know, and that's bad.
Well, I will tell you as a television personality, this is the way it goes. They tell me how much they love me. And then while I'm still in listening distance, I can hear them go, "Boy, that Tanguay is just a real jerk." Yeah. So at least you get it to your face.
You know, yeah, this may not even be the most overt example of this circumstance. If we go back to the days of Rick Barry, trust me on that.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He got crushed?
Oh, God. And especially the year, because in 76, he wound up on the broadcast crew in the finals. Right. And they let him have it here. You know.
I hated him. I hated Rick.
Didn't everybody?
Oh, I hated Rick Barry.
He was a piece of work, let me tell you. I liked him personally a little bit that I got to know him, but the public, the face he put up with the public was not geared to win over the anybody, trust me.
All right, we get some other games to move on.
Yeah, we got some good stuff. Yeah.
All right, but first, let me tell you this. As a small business owner, you are juggling hundreds of balls in the air. You don't have time to interview candidates. So what do? You got to find somebody who can help you make more money. Create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. Then add your job in the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring to your network. They can help you find the right people to hire. Simple tools like screening questions make it easier to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires from leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. So check them out today. LinkedIn.com/scribe to post your job for free. That is LinkedIn.com/scribe. Okay, we'll get to the Sixers right now. And the thought with the Sixers is that, okay, Harden's going to be too fat and out of shape, but maybe he's not the number two guy, Jeff Gooden. Maybe it's going to be Tyrese Maxey who is going to be the Robin to Embiid's Batman.
It's amazing. I mean, like, I remember Maxey, his first college game at the Champions Classic, and he was friggin' unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then after that, he kind of came down to earth, and, you know, he was good at Kentucky, but not great. And I thought, honestly, he was a guy that didn't shoot it that well, was a scorer, but slight of build. And, you know, I felt like he could be a piece for the Sixers, but not this, not a consistent guy who honestly gives you he gives you a burst. Like, that's what Harden doesn't have anymore. He doesn't have that burst. And with the new rules, it takes away from what Harden was able to do so successfully, right? Get to the line whenever he wanted. You know, and Maxey's just been a godsend for them because.
Just explain that a little bit. Just explain that. That's a little inside basketball. Explain exactly what you mean on that.
Yeah, I mean the hand check. Like first of all, you can't put your hands on a guy, so that helped Harden for so long. Number two, now you can't basically flail into a guy and get the call.
Right,
and that's what Harden was doing. Right,
the uptake and lean in was his calling card, and he got away with it a lot, and then generally barreling over people, he got the benefit of the doubt more than almost anybody else, and they took that away from him this year. It's thinking about Maxey, I thought, Jeff, it almost instantaneously with Harden's arrival is when he moved to this new level.
Yeah,
because
Harden's been the one thing you can say, like, you can criticize James Harden for a lot of things, but his basketball IQ is extremely, extremely high. He took advantage of that, the way the game was called, to be able to get to the line as much as he could. Not the most athletic dude in the world. And now he's become almost more of a point guard.
Oh, look at his totals.
He's got weapons. I mean, Embiid might be the best player in the league, or arguably, you know, he's top 3, 5, whatever you want to call him. Tobias Harris now becomes a piece. And Maxey gives you another piece. And their bench is pretty good. So, listen, I don't know if they can win the whole thing, but right now, if Maxey continues to play this way it gives them a fighter's chance.
I had put them in my personal back burner, and now they're starting to worry me.
Yeah.
If I, from a Boston fan standpoint, I'm starting to worry about them. I think we have to absolutely factor them in, because I've been picking Milwaukee, as you know, and I still will. But and I'm respectful of Miami, but I had put Philadelphia behind both of them now automatically. But I don't know. I mean, we've not just think we've got five teams. I mean, the Celtics, who knows? You know,
we got guys. It's awesome. I mean, I think teams. That this is the most exciting playoff scenario we've had in years. Because all the teams are, you know, I'm going to say, they're gonna be good. Oh, it's very good. They're very, no, all these teams are so entertaining and so great. They're awesome. Bob, yeah. I think this is great for the league.
And every once in a while, we kind of just not dismiss. We just forget about Miami. And then Duncan Robinson goes off with 8 threes.
You know, I forget about Miami every day. And I don't know why, because, you know, they're so damn good.
Well, they are, and Bam, you know, we know Bam is a problem, and Jimmy Butler is, you know, however cantankerous and however annoying he may be in the locker room or wherever.
Break down the names. Like, we know that it's a name league, but you got the freak in Milwaukee. You've got Tatum here with the Celtics. You've got Embiid with Philadelphia. You've got Durant with Brooklyn. Who am I forgetting? Any? Am I forgetting somebody else? I
mean, Giannis, Trae Young.
Yeah, the freak. So those are like names. Those are like all-star names that we haven't had in forever. We haven't had this much depth since Pat Ewing was with the Knicks.
And you're talking about only the East right now. We haven't gotten to the West. The East is far more entertaining than it's been in years, top to bottom. Because it's been the West. We've talked about the West, I feel like, for the last 10 or 15 years as being the dominant conference. And now I love the East because there's not a lot of parity.
All right. Do you guys want to get to Steph? Are we good on Philly?
I'm ready.
Yeah, let's talk to Steph. Steph screamed, "I'm back." All right, game two. He's back. Coming off the bench.
Highly animated last night. You know, I mean, I know he likes to celebrate himself occasionally, but he's really celebrating himself lately. There's something, you know, he's maybe he doubted how fast he would be able to come back after the injury. I don't know. But what he's done the last two games, especially last night, for people who don't know, he played 23 minutes off the bench and had 34 points. And pretty good.
He's feeling good. I mean, you guys know. I mean, when an athlete doesn't feel well, they're a bitch. They're cranky. Yeah. They're not, you know, and that means he feels good. So look out, world.
All right. I got a question for Mr. Goodman. I paid scant attention to Jordan Poole in college. Yeah. I paid scant attention to Jordan Poole last year. I mean, to what extent are you surprised that he's become this level of player? If you want.
Shocked. I mean, 5 for 10 again last night from three. You knew he was a really good shooter. But, man, Bob Myers, I think he took him, what did he go, 28th, 29th? Something late first round. It was toward the end of the first round. A lot of people thought, all right, you know what? You take a flyer on this guy. Maybe he'll be a guy who comes off the bench, makes some threes for the second unit. Now, again, he's been fortunate to some degree because Clay was hurt that he got an opportunity. And it's all about that, right? It's all about those opportunities. He got it and he took advantage of it. And now I'll tell you what, you look at Maxey, you look at Jordan Poole, and then we're going to go on to the next guy probably in a few minutes, Jalen Brunson. I mean, those are three dudes that you just didn't see coming, and they're all different. They all do different things, but Jordan Poole has given Golden State another dimension. The only thing I think they're still missing is a big, athletic, shot-blocking dude, and that guy's name is James Wiseman, and he just hasn't been healthy.
No, it's Kevin Poole's not the answer there. Kevin Dooley. 28, you're right. He was 28th, not first round, 28th pick. My question, you know, when Clay, you know, he was there without Clay, I said, and he flourished. And the question was, when Clay comes back and he has to sit down and have minutes reduced, will he adapt? And apparently, you know, he has now. And then he got a chance now in the playoffs to start again. He's going to have to go back to that role maybe in the next game. This isn't going to, you know, forget about this death squad thing. Steph is not coming off the bench anymore. Now, do you remember this, though? We had a little controversy 1 year. I think it was 82, 83. I'm not sure. When Larry got hit by Harvey's catchings and he had to wear the mask. And he came off the bench on his way back. And it seemed to be working. and Fitch kept it going longer than most fans thought was appropriate. And
how did Larry react to that?
Larry was cool. Yeah. He was pretty cool, at least, you know, to my knowledge, maybe behind closed doors.
He liked Fitch. Larry liked Fitch.
He stuck up for Fitch when no one else did, as we well know. But anyway, that's the only comparable thing I can think of as keeping a guy a superstar.
You know, who cares? If you're Steph, you've won titles, you've won MVPs. Does it really matter? He knows he's going to be on the court when it matters at the end of the game.
I think you're 100% correct.
Who cares? He doesn't care.
He's got the right temperament.
Steph is the, to me, he's the outlier superstar. Now, I know you said he's jumping around. He's celebrating a lot more. That's the kid in him. And maybe some people look at his arrogance. I do not. I still will say to this day, when I'm able to see Steph in a locker room or wherever, and I don't have any sort of great relationship with Steph. It dates back to really probably LeBron camp with him coming out of Davidson, his last year at Davidson. And he will come up to me and say hello to me every single time. And not a lot of guys at that level do that, you know? So I just don't think Steph has changed much. I respect the hell out of how he's been. You never hear anything negative about him. And I think he's fine with coming off the bench at this stage of his career.
And about the team, by the way, I am now prepared to say they got a shot. They'd be much better off with a deterrent guy in the, but the fact is I think they feel pretty good about themselves right now. And Draymond is, by the way, holding Jokic to unheard of shooting percentages. And Jokic got so fed up, you know, he got himself tossed last night. And Draymond did gave him an official wide wave goodbye, you know, as only Draymond would. But no, but seriously, attention must be paid now to the Warriors. I can easily foresee a Warriors Suns.
How many teams? Here's my question. How many teams do you see as legitimate contenders to win this whole thing right now?
I'd say one. All right, I'm going to be strict. I'll be a hard marker here.
Okay, go ahead.
Two in the East, which are the Milwaukee and Miami, because they're the more proven. Philadelphia, and can't put the Celtics there yet. They got too many. They got to get by this series. Yep. And in the West, Phoenix, no reason to doubt them at all.
Yep.
And then I think the next team is Golden State.
Yeah.
So you have four. You have four teams.
Yeah.
Realistically, with a chance to.
That's the four. There's my the four. This is my first inner sanctum.
I agree. I mean, I think out of the West, you've only got two teams, and that's Phoenix and Golden State. I think out of the East, you could have a surprise, you know. Again, you could.
I'm still worried about the Nets and Philly, and I hear you.
Yes,
the Nets and Philly to me, because they got stars, and they're an X factor. Though I mean, you know, you don't know they got stars, but if Simmons comes back, does he mess things up? Does Kyrie keep his head on straight? Did the Nets get out of the series with the Celtics? Who knows? Philadelphia, does Harden all of a sudden have a couple of big games? Maxie's come up. You get Embiid.
Yeah, you never know.
If you got Embiid and Durant on a team with a decent supporting cast, I'm not counting them out.
I would favor Philly over them in this discussion, from what I've seen of Philly, because I don't. But
they have more weapons.
But I'm not this.
Right.
I could make the devil's advocate argument that you just made as well, but
I hear you, Bob. I get it. No,
I have to admit that there's a factor that raised me to Philly, and it's called Doc Rivers. So I'm rooting for Doc. You know, if the Celtics don't win, I want Doc to win. Frankly, that's Bob Ryan. That's a personal thing.
Bob loves Doc. I do too. I love Doc too, and he's been maligned, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with Bob here.
He's got stuff to live with, and he knows it. And I heard him yesterday a bite and make an allusion to the idea that I want to win badly. The feeling of winning is unsurpassed. It's great. And he said, but the feeling of not winning when you think you can win is awful. And he ought to know not winning those seventh games, you know, 3-1 leads, plural, you know.
Well, I just like him because he's not an asshole. And right now in this world, it's good enough for me.
You want him as your next door neighbor.
That's
a category of guys. Yeah. I always said the first coach I said that he's like your next door neighbor. Oh, he just happens to coach the Celtics. That was Chris Ford.
Right.
He was as regular a guy as I ever encountered in coaching ever at that point. Now, but Doc is he's a real regular person too. He's not some look at me guy at all. He's a real person, and I'm really fond of Doc. I admit it. But anyway, but technically speaking, I understand your argument for the Nets. They're worrisome. They worry the hell out of you with those two guys. There's no doubt.
All right, look, you guys want to move on to Jalen Brunson?
Yeah, do I?
Bob, go ahead.
Thank you. Jalen Brunson is a personal little clinic of how to play that position. He just isn't the most athletic guy in the world, and he's not that big. He just happens to be a born point guard who's made the most of every ounce of ability that God gave him. And last night, but, and never dreamed there was a 40-point game in him, screaming to get out. That is one of the most surprising things to me, that Jalen Brunson had a 41-point playoff game. I saw Jalen Brunson having a 20-assist game long before I saw him ever having a 41-point game. God love him. No, he's a wonderful – I want him. I've been wanting him. I want him coming off my bench, you know, in Boston right now. Oh, boy. But I'm a major member of the fan club.
So I texted Jay Wright, who Brunson won two national titles at Villanova. I texted him on Saturday. And I said, is it just me? Or there's so many similarities between Jalen Brunson and Kyle Lowry, right? Both kind of undersized, don't look the part. Neither are super athletic. Question coming out of high school. Brunson was higher rated coming out of high school, but still question coming out of college. And he wrote back, definitely, believe it or not, Gillespie is similar to Jalen too. I did a story on Colin Gillespie earlier this year, Villanova senior point guard, and I texted Jalen Brunson. He literally texted me right back. We talked about Gillespie for a while. One of the fun parts of the conversation was when people talk about Villanova's point guards, Villanova's team overall, but specifically their point guards, they talk about them being robots. They don't show any emotion. So I asked Jalen that, and Gillespie, both of them I've talked to, and Jalen just laughed about it. He's like, yeah, that's kind of how we're taught at Villanova. He's like, we actually do have personality. I know we don't show it, but we actually do have personality. And Jalen Brunson, honestly, not many kids you root for more than Jalen Brunson, because he plays the game the right way, Bob.
He is the kind of guy that coaches use as examples, yes, to people. I talked about him with Rick when Carlisle was still coaching him. Yeah. And he, you know, it's so good to see someone like that and to see someone like that have success. Yeah. So meanwhile, I thought they were going to get swept without Luka.
Of course.
And that shocked the hell out of me. And I still think they're going to lose, but that's a wonderful night for Jalen Brunson. One more series in that side I want to just throw out there, and I'm not hardly alone. The sneaky fun filled series is Minnesota and Memphis.
Yes.
Well, what about it? So I'm going to throw this one out to you, Mr. Goodman. Just speak among yourself. Anthony Edwards, go ahead. Tell me, what do you think?
So I really questioned him. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
I love him. They didn't win any games at Georgia. They won five SEC games. He was tough to watch second half of the year. Bad teammate, bad body language, bad shot selection. But looking back, listen, nobody questioned his talent. Look at him, big, strong, athletic. My biggest question was Tom Crean didn't know how to use him. He played him with the ball in his hands all the time at the point when he had another point named Sahvir Wheeler, who plays at Kentucky right now and is a pass-first point.
Yes.
Instead, he played Edwards at the point because I feel like he got sold a bill of goods that maybe he made a promise to him that he'd play him at the point. I don't know what it was, but he misutilized Anthony Edwards in college. I still want to see it's impacted winning way earlier than I thought Anthony Edwards would. Mm-hmm. I just want to see it sustain itself.
Yeah, but it's really interesting though. 36 in the last time out. Of course, Towns is going to score, and of course the other side you got Mr. Excitement, you know, and Morant, that's again what we're seeing at the outset, Gary. Everybody who loves this sport said it could be a good playoffs. You know,
that's awesome.
Guess what? After the early returns, we were right. It's setting itself up to be a tremendous playoffs.
As we wrap things up, Bob has yet to see episode 3 of Winning Time on HBO.
We can't do this every episode, Gary. We can't. We can't do this every episode. You're going to rile Bob up for the rest of the day.
Can I just tell you one thing? And I told him this off the air. I saw episode 7. I love it. I'm infatuated with it. And it's kind of tough because the Celtics are the bad guys. I mean, it's – look, folks, this is entertainment. It's not fact, all right? It's not fact. But Jason Clark playing Jerry West is so nervous, he can't go in the Garden. So he's listening to the game in the limo, right? And Maxwell passes to Bird. And then Jerry West, Jason Clark is Jerry West, goes, mother bleeping cornbread. And I clipped it and I sent it to Cedric. It's awesome. It's so good. It's a little cartoonish when it comes to the stuff.
Now, there's a soupçon of truth in that vignette, that he wouldn't come to Boston at all.
Oh, yeah, he wouldn't go in. Yeah, he
by the way, even some of his own home games, supposed the story is he would ride around.
Come on.
He wouldn't even stay in the Forum some nights.
Yeah, it's really.
Now he's totally, you know, got issues, you know, and if you read his book, he admits to them.
Yeah. In all honesty, the seriousness of the, I mean, the point of this show that I like, which I think is pays tribute to Jerry West, is Jerry West. Yes, it shows his character arc. He had a very difficult childhood, as Bob, very difficult, abusive, the whole bit. The Celtics thing haunted him. He put immense pressure on himself, and West made the move that started it all for the Showtime. When nobody else, he stepped down and he hired McKinney. And, you know, McKinney comes in and McKinney started Showtime. West makes the move, has McKinney do it. You know, McKinney had the bike accident, which is unfortunate. But, you
know, we've got breaking news. Kyrie was fined $50,000 for the middle finger gesture. Okay.
Dropping the bucket for him. But anyways, I just wanted to throw that out.
Concluding with West, 19th of April is the 60th anniversary of Selvey's shot. And that people who follow basketball know very well what I'm talking about. In game 7 of the 1962 finals, Celtics and Lakers, the Lakers had the last shot, a 15-footer roughly on the left baseline. Frank Selvey took it and missed it. And the Celtics went on and won in overtime behind Bill Russell's 30 points and 40 rebounds. Just another night at the office. But West, I'm sure this is not an anniversary that'll please Jerry West. Don't bring it up to Jerry West. So there you go.
Good stuff, guys. And I'm sure next week we will have just as much to talk.
We're going to be rolling for the rest of it until June.
I'm headed to the game tomorrow night. So I'm excited. Game 2. I wish we would see – I don't think we'll see Robert Williams or Ben Simmons, but hopefully we'll get another hell of a game.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.